Welcome to another edition of Double Crossed Radio, coming to you live from the Republic of Jefferson. And tonight, the Republic of Jefferson is all over the place. We're in Carmen del Playa, Mexico, and Ashland, Oregon, and Acapulco, Mexico. That's quite a show we have lined up for you folks today. We're going to be talking about 9/11. This is the first time since we've started our show. We're starting our third year now. This is the first time in that time that the anniversary of 9/11 has come on the date of our show on Thursday night. So we wanted to really make this special. We did a show last year, and that show is going to air shortly after this show. About the 30 minutes of that show was possible. There's a lot more stuff to talk about on 9/11, and we're not going to even be able to get through all the stuff there is to talk about tonight. We have, as a special guest tonight, from Acapulco, Mexico, Jeff Berwick, the Dollar Vigilante, and he's a good friend of the show. And Jeff, welcome.
Gracias. How are you guys doing?
Doing just great. Now, to continue on with our introduction to Jeff, for those of you who aren't familiar with Jeff or don't know his work, he has the website Dollar Vigilante, and he writes a daily column for that every day, and that's a free service to people, and they can read that every day, and it's great information. And he also has a subscription newsletter that comes out. It comes out twice a month. Is that correct, or every 2 weeks?
Three or four times a month, actually. There's so much to write about with the end of the monetary system as we know it.
It comes out as they have an issue ready.
Yeah.
So it's coming out more and more frequently, then. That's great. And it's available for subscription. I believe it's $15 a month, or you can get a discount for a year subscription.
That's right.
Is it still that rate?
Yep.
And I think that's one of the best values in America, or the world as a total, because there's a lot of great information there. The analysts that write for that have fabulous stock picks, and they do pretty well. You're not going to win every time, but you're going to win a lot more than you lose, and they're going to end up ahead by a long shot, because the winners are like, they call them, this is stock talk, they call them 4 and 5 and 10 baggers, and the losers are you hardly lose anything. So there's a great stock tips in there. They also had information about, Jeff Berwick was one of the first people calling attention to Bitcoin when it was, down around $5 or $10, maybe even less than that. I don't remember when you first started.
It was 2011, around between $3 and $7.
Yeah, I know a lot of people became millionaires by listening to Jeff Berwick on Bitcoin. So just don't take it. He's not just a pretty face. He's a big brain. He's a mega brain. And he's interested in 9/11 truth, which is awesome, because that's what our show's about tonight. And Jeff, you had two columns recently. The first one was about a month ago, I believe, and you're just showing how the information about 9/11 was getting out to more and more people, and that was good news. Did you want to say anything more on that part before I get to the next question? Or
sure. You can definitely. I've been sort of awake to what happened on 9/11 for about almost 10 years, if I remember correctly. And I remember it was pretty slow going at the start. There was just a few people who were questioning things. There was a documentary that was put out by a good friend of mine and people he was involved with, Luke Radowski, called Loose Change, and that changed everything for me. And I have not stopped researching it and looking into it ever since then, including up to today. I just saw another amazing speech done by a 9/11 truther, as they call us, which is supposed to be some sort of insult. So, these guys, all they do is talk about the truth. It's ridiculous. It's horrible. incredible. There was a period of time where I remember I used to talk about these things and I get a lot of people angry at me and how could you say that? And now it seems like the great majority of people I talk to about this all agree with me. So there's been a massive awakening going on. I think there's still people who watch their television programming every night in the U.S. and it's called Programming for a Reason, who still don't know what really happened that day. I'm not saying that I know every single thing that happened that day, but the official story is the most crazy conspiracy theory I've ever heard in my life.
Well, it kind of sounded like a conspiracy theory at first until we started to read what the official report came out as, the 9/11 report, and it doesn't make any sense at all. Which last year we went into the how it absolutely couldn't explain the demolition of the three buildings. It was you talk to any architect or any engineer, and not all the ones will sign the petition because they're afraid of, their people in this country are afraid to speak out. How could that happen in a free country, huh?
But anyway, I know a few architects who did sign the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth petition and were fired right after it. So that explains a big part of it right there.
Yeah, there isn't one that I would let build a building for me that doesn't agree that those buildings couldn't come down without explosive charges to help it.
Yeah, and the official 9/11 report didn't even mention Building 7. Not one mention of it, which is kind of interesting. It was more than a 50-story building that collapsed due to a few office fires into its own footprint later that day. Wow. And it's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, anyway, I wasn't sure exactly all the things that I would want to cover today, but one of the things that I originally got interested in was I was listening to Alex Jones' show, and they were talking, it wasn't about 9/11, they were talking about, it was a crime scene investigator, it was a while back, and he said, in fact, I think this was a guy that was doing the Sandy Hook shooting stuff, and he's a former policeman, but he says when you go to a crime scene, you look at, well, who has the opportunity? Who is there that has opportunity to pull this off? And once you realize that there had to be explosive places, this is a pretty, you don't just go into those buildings and one night when no one's there and in a free fall demolition into its own footprint. It has to be done over time, and only people that have with pretty much unlimited access to the building and there wouldn't arouse any suspicion are going to be people that can get away with something like that. And so immediately I'm thinking maintenance and security.
Yeah, the security of the building was under the control of Jeb Bush at that time. Who was it?
Marvin Bush.
Marvin Bush, one of the Bush crime family. He was under control of that. Even more interesting is the pentagram, or the Pentagon, as some people call it. September 10th, 2001, the day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld announced that the Department of Defense, or his department, as they call it, was missing $2.3 trillion. Not million, that'd be kind of bad, but not billion, that'd be pretty huge. $2.3 trillion. And the next day, there was a huge explosion in the department area where they were looking into where those funds went. And that area had just been recently closed off and sealed to reinforce it in case of terrorist attacks. So the more you look into these things, the more obvious it is.
Yeah. Back on that security detail, one of the things that happened a few days before 9/11 is there was a powder outage in the South Tower from floor 50 up to the top, and the power was out for 36 hours. And during that time, none of the magnetic door locks worked, none of the security cameras worked. Basically, those guys could go and work 24/7 without anybody knowing what they were doing.
Yeah, there's so much evidence of all these things that It's just unbelievable that some people won't open their eyes to all of these facts. There's countless. There's literally thousands and thousands of facts. We're not talking about speculation. These are all actually documented facts that show that what they were saying about 9/11 just was not true, and it's not even physically possible. And the more you look into it, the more you find, and it's unbelievable. I just watched a recent speech by, I forget her exact name, Barbara Poole-something in Seattle. She did a three-hour presentation showing all the details of the Pentagon explosions, and she had really nailed it down detail by detail on where everybody was, what happened, and the more you look into it, the more you find out that nothing they said that happened that day is how it happened, including the plane in Shanksville, where there was just a small garbage fire in a field, no evidence of a plane hitting. The coroner showed up, and he said he left after 15 minutes because there was nothing for him to do there. There was no bodies, there was no plane. And he described it as looking like a small garbage fire, and people just assume these planes just disintegrate on contact with anything, and there's no evidence whatsoever that there was a plane there.
Yeah, and what wreckage there was spread over 8 miles, and that's not what happens when you have a plane crash. So they're either shot down or they just faked it.
Yeah, I've heard the evidence about wreckage for miles and miles, and I think there was a screw-up. NORAD was told to stand down by Dick Cheney, who was left in charge that day while they sent George W. off to read to school children, and he told everyone to stand down. NORAD, the defense systems were all told to stand down. They weren't even aware of what was going on until it was all over. But apparently, if I had to speculate, and now we're speculating, this isn't fact, that plane probably did get shot down. There was probably a fighter pilot who didn't get the word to stand down on that one. And I don't know where it was headed. There's no way to know, but it must have been headed somewhere. But these are all the things that are very interesting and no one talks about.
They conveniently had planned some sort of a trial exercise that seemed to be exactly what happened on 9/11 for that time period, so they had a plausible reason to say stand down. On to the next fact, and then I want to get into some of the things, reasons why people should really be aware of this, because that's really why we have you on here, is the economic stuff. But one more fact that I thought was just mind-bending. If you have a crime scene, and this is, I mean, anybody that just has watched a little bit of NCI knows that if you have a crime scene, you don't want to disturb that crime scene because everything in there is evidence, and it's going to tell you something. And so what did they do when they had all that rubble and rubbish there at the three sites where the buildings came down? Well, they just started hauling it away immediately, and they shipped the scrap metal off to China, I think, and they buried all the rest of the debris in garbage piles, so it was commingled with other stuff, so they couldn't ever possibly do any investigative work on any of that debris. Basically, they were covering up whatever evidence was there. They were destroying it. And that's a crime in itself. So whoever gave that order, they should be in prison for just, you know, disturbing a crime scene. And these are just obvious things that people that aren't even in law enforcement understand yet. Newspaper, journalists, nobody reported on that at all. And the ones that did got their stuff scrubbed, and they got fired. It's just, and people say, well, someone would have spoken up. A lot of people spoke up. Some of them died.
Yeah. Quite a few have been killed since then who were speaking up. It's obviously a giant cover-up of what really happened, but they're having a really hard time controlling it now because of the internet. People are getting access to this information and starting to ask a lot more questions. Yeah. 9/11 Architects and Engineers for Truth, just today in Times Square in New York, had a giant video billboard showing the World Trade Center 7 collapse and telling people to ask questions about what happened. So this isn't going away, and it's going to be interesting how it develops. We now have Ron Paul coming out and saying that he thinks essentially it was an inside job. We have this 28 pages of documents that some senators have seen and said that this changes everything about 9/11 and we should tell the public, but they're still restricting, so that might come out. There's all kinds of things still to be done here.
I don't know if it was yesterday or today. I don't get a chance to look at this stuff very much on my quote-unquote vacation, which is okay because my wife deserves some of my time too. But anyway, on Alex Jones' show, they had a segment. I was interviewing Colonel Schaefer, and he's seen the document too. And he said, and Alex kind of laid out a scenario, and he says, "Well, I can't say it anything about the whole thing you can say, but I can say that the country you named is correct, and that country was Saudi Arabia, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, as almost all of the hijackers came from Saudi Arabia."
Theoretically, yes. A lot of those hijackers are still alive today and kind of angry that they were named as being some of the hijackers. But yeah, that, another funny thing, like no one asks questions in the U.S. anymore. So according to the official story, it was all Saudi Arabian hijackers who blew up these things. And then so the U.S. attacks Afghanistan and then Iraq, which had no connection whatsoever to 9/11. But Wesley Clark actually said numerous times now that within a few days of 9/11, he was told, and that's of course the retired General Wesley Clark, that they already had plans set up to attack Afghanistan and then Iraq, and I forget the exact order and names, but it was Sudan, Libya, which they've now done, Syria, which they're doing at the moment, and another one, and then Iran was the big one, and they plan to do it all within 5 years. So they've actually been thwarted quite a bit, their plans. People are not so easily fooled, especially after Iraq, where that was all supposed to be about weapons of mass destruction, which did not exist. So there's a lot going on. This is not over, and it hasn't even begun yet, and it's going to be very interesting how it all plays out.
Yeah. Okay, now the main reason we always want to have you on is because is financially and financial matters. You are a what we call you're a mega brain. That's a good way to put it. I want all the listeners out there to know it isn't just that he's a smart guy. He works really hard researching the stuff and looking into stuff and just going and read stuff that's available for everybody to read. But he goes out there and does the work, and it's a full-time job for him. And that's how come he knows all this stuff, because he spends a lot of time learning it. And what 9/11 has done to the United States economically is a disaster. And maybe you could kind of go through some of the things that have happened to people that they're not even aware of, that because you will say it much better than I will.
Well, first of all, the Project for a New American Century was a group of what you would call neocons that actually put out a report on September 11th, oddly enough, a lot of coincidences in a lot of this stuff, the year before 9/11, in the year 2000. And the name of the report was Rebuilding America's Defenses, and it was headed up by people like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, many of the names that you know as being these sort of people. And they called for what they said was necessary to make the U.S. empire strong and make it so they could go and attack countries around the world. They said they needed a new Pearl Harbor. And so this was sort of a plan by nefarious interests that have, according to Wesley Clark again, he has come out numerous times and said that there was a coup of the U.S. government by these people at that time and still exists today in various forms. And so this changed everything. The U.S. wasn't in too horrible of a shape in the year 2001. The total debt, I'm just going to guess here, but I think it was well under $10 trillion. We're currently over $18
trillion. It was more like under $4 trillion, I think.
Yeah, it was maybe $5, $6 trillion, something around there. So it's like tripled since 9/11.
I think it doubled during the Bush administration. It's doubled again since.
Yeah, that sounds approximately correct. So that's just been unbelievable. That's such a massive amount of debt now, $18 trillion, and it goes up by about $1 trillion a year. The total expenses spent of taxation revenue or extortion revenue by all the facets of the Defense Department and military has doubled since 2001. It was below $500 billion back then. It's now over $1 trillion, which is almost half of all the tax revenue collected in the U.S. just goes towards the military now. And So yes, this has created a massive, massive change. The finances of the U.S. government have completely destroyed just in the last 13 years. Before that, like I said, it wasn't too terrible. I was never irate at the dollar vigilante. I was never saying, oh, the U.S. dollar is going to collapse soon back in 2000 and 1999. I knew there was some problems, and but there was still a decent chance that fix them, but it's gone the exact opposite way, and they've just made it so unbelievably worse now that there's actually no chance that this can continue much longer. The U.S. dollar will collapse. There's all kind. The U.S. government has literally gone out of control since that time. The amount of spending has been unbelievable, to the point now where the economy has been destroyed by a lot of the money printing, which is needed to support all of this debt of the U.S. government, because buying the U.S. government debt like they used to, U.S. Treasury bonds, China, Japan, many places like this. The Federal Reserve has bought more than all of them combined in the last few years, and that's just to keep the system alive, because if they didn't, the U.S. government would have pretty much collapsed. They'd be insolvent, and so they just print money to try to keep it looking like it's alive, and of course that ends up in hyperinflation, and we're going to see things like that. We're seeing the rest of the world geopolitically all moving away from the dollar. I don't think a day goes by. I don't see two countries that have agreed to stop using the dollar and to use their own currencies and trade. It's over. It's baked in the cake. With the total debt and liabilities of the U.S. government, because things like socialist insecurity or Social Security, it's been bankrupt for a while, and all they're doing is just keep all the money that comes into it that's supposed to be saved up for people to retire on is all immediately spent. And so those are all liabilities. And so the total liabilities and debt of the U.S. government right now is well over, and my minimum estimate is $85 trillion. That works out to $250,000 per person in the U.S. or a family of four would have over $1 million of U.S. just U.S. federal government debt and liabilities alone overhanging it, and that doesn't include state debts or debts or even debt. And Americans have never been more in debt personally either. So it's a giant debt catastrophe, or you could call it credit catastrophe as well, that is going to collapse very soon. And a lot of it all started around 9/11 and with this plan and this coup taking over of the U.S. government.
Yeah, now a couple things you said in there, and I think people need to put these together with one more word. You're talking about hyperinflation and private trade agreements between countries. Now, the reason why those two things are important is when countries don't need their dollars anymore because they don't need them to trade with each other, because it ceases to be an international trading dollar or a barter exchange or medium of exchange. If they don't need them anymore, those dollars are going to come back to this country. They're going to use them to buy something from here and just get rid of them. They don't want them in their country. So we have trillions and trillions of dollars on the rest of the world that'll come washing back on our shores, and that's going to be the start of the hyperinflation. But you were right. It's baked in the cake. When we first had you on the show, it was a little over 2 years ago, you told us it's going to be, it would be within 10 years, probably within five. You wouldn't count out it being within two, and it's just been in a little bit less than 2 years from when you were first on our show, you had a column that said it's already started. It says you just look around you, the signs are there, and it's true. Everything... It's the snowball starting to roll down the hill.
Yeah, massively, and we're seeing all the symptoms of all these things all over the place. It's funny how some people say, oh, there's really no inflation, because the government says with their consumer price index, CPI index, which is completely like it. There's no connection between that and the actual price of anything in the economy is 2%. But anyone who looks around would recognize all the symptoms of a going on. You look at just trying to get a university or college education nowadays is hundreds of thousands of dollars. That didn't used to be the case at all, and a lot of them go into student loan debt for it, and student loan debt, not many people know, is the only debt in the U.S. that you can't actually absolve via bankruptcy. So these younger people are already born with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt.
That's the closest thing to slavery since the since the Civil War. That's you don't want to have any student loan debt at all, period.
Yeah, Yeah, and most of the things that people go to university or college for are totally useless or actually worse than useless, things like economics. They don't actually teach any real economics. They teach government statist Keynesian economics, which has no real value and just doesn't work. That's the other thing that they've been really doing. They've been pushing almost every bad thing you can think possible. It's almost like they're trying to destroy the U.S., and I'm starting to come to the realization that that might actually be a plan. It might not just be stupidity, and this all ties into this whole idea of, for example, in 1934 in the Chicago Tribune, there was a cartoon, and the cartoon was essentially saying the government, this is back in 34, this is after they had just confiscated all Americans' gold in the robbery, and they were essentially bankrupt at that time, and this is a plan. They spend all the money, they inflate the currency, they blame it all on capitalism, which is what we're starting to see, and then they bring in a dictatorship, and that's essentially what is in the U.S. today. There's no difference between the left side puppet or the right side puppet. They all do the same thing. It's just a big show, and we're just seeing just massive amounts of it's just going downhill so fast right now. And you see things like minimum wage workers, fast food workers going into the street wanting a rise in the minimum wage to $15. They say they need that for a living wage, and they're right. And first of all, I don't know if you should be really raising a family if all you do is flip burgers at McDonald's. But besides that, the money is being debased at such a value, at such a rate, that a lot of people can't even afford to live right now. You look in the U.S., 50 million people on food stamps who can't really afford to eat on their own. There's states in the U.S. that have more people on welfare than have jobs. This thing is just a disaster. It's just horrible. And the only reason it looks like it's still alive or still working is because they're printing money. And a lot of that money, of course, goes in first into assets, hard assets, like the stock market, which is at all-time highs at a time when real unemployment, and again, don't listen to the government figures, if it was calculated the way it was in the 80s and 90s, they learned how to take out all the unemployment from the unemployment numbers, it's around 25% right now, which is Great Depression level.
It's been at 25% since 2007, or late 2007.
Yeah, a lot of people say, well, we went through that financial crisis in 2008, but now everything's getting better. No, it's much, much, much worse now. The total amount of debt globally in 2008 was about $70 trillion. It's now over $100 trillion. So that's gone up almost 50% in the last 6 years. All the misallocations, all the banks, everything, all the problems that caused 2007, 2008 are much worse now. And it's going to be, once it all starts to really come off the rails, it's going to come off incredibly hard, so hard that no one will even believe how bad it gets. And so few people actually even realize this is a possibility. It's not just a possibility, it will happen. And like you said, I was on your show a couple of years ago, and I said, I don't think it's going to collapse in the next couple of years, but I think 5 years, no more than 10 years. Well, now I'm pretty much saying less than 5 years, and it very easily could be in the next 1 year with everything I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, for those of you also who didn't pick up on this, and earlier when he was talking about the people are these debts and everything, remember that we have this thing called this border fence, and they're getting all the neocons out there to build this border fence. That fence isn't to keep people out. It's to keep you in. They can't let you go because you're the security on that debt. Your earnings for your lifetime is that security. So, I mean, you don't have much time left to get out of Dodge.
Yeah, just getting physically out is just one problem that's going to be a major issue over the next few years, but they already started shutting it down so you can't get your assets outside of the U.S. as an American very easily. They rolled out FATCA, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, which has effectively meant that there's barely a bank in the world that will accept Americans outside of the U.S. now. There's no brokerages that I know of, and they're just making it harder and harder to get your assets a loan out. And then I think the next step, people will go from being tax cows in the U.S. to actual milk cows. I've said that for many years. I'm hearing Acapulco, Mexico. I heard someone else on the line here is in Playa del Carmen, another beautiful place. Yeah. Oh, that's you, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm here on a vacation, but I'm liking it here.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, yeah, it's awesome, right? A lot more freedom.
This is a story Jeff Berwick can appreciate, and some of the rest of you out here in the audience may not appreciate, but he can appreciate this. I know it. We were eating last night at a restaurant that's on the beach here and on the Caribbean, looking out over, there's storms out in the distance. We could see lightning, and there's quite a light show going on there. And they were setting up a special dinner for a romantic dinner for this couple, and they had to have some special lighting there, so they took an extension cord from the restaurant and ran it all the way out there in the sand, and they dug a little trench and just is about 3 inches deep and covered it up so people wouldn't trip on it. And I'm looking at it and says, now that's exactly something that could never happen in America, and it's happening here. And that's why it's freer in Mexico than it is in America, because they just don't care. They just do what they want to do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's so dramatically less regulation, government involvement in your day-to-day life. Down here, people mostly just do whatever they want to, as long as you don't hurt anyone else. So even those folks who are out on the beach there, they're probably having some wine. That'd be illegal in many places in the U.S. to be drinking alcohol outside of a registered, government-approved, permitted place. It's just crazy, and it's so funny how people think Mexico is dangerous. I know many Mexicans who will not go to the U.S. because they consider it to be far too dangerous with the government and the policing and the Homeland Security and the TSA. It's unbelievable, and not many people know this. There's actually more Mexicans who leave the U.S. to come back to Mexico than who go to the U.S. from Mexico now. So whenever they bring up these border things, a lot of people go, we got to keep those Mexicans out. Well, don't worry, a lot of them are leaving, and not many are going anymore. So if that's what you wanted, you got it.
The trouble is we're losing all the ones that were worth something, and the ones that are staying are the ones that are here because they're criminals and they get away with everything.
Yeah, so there's an actual saying I got from my Mexican wife about Los Angeles, and she said that's a well-known saying in Mexico, that's where we send our garbage. all the worst kind of Mexicans go up there for whatever reason, and Mexicans don't seem to mind that. They're fine with that.
Yeah, okay, so back to the financial thing. We're in horrible debt. We have, and by the way, Jeff's service, the Dollar Vigilante, he has, and it's a good time to plug some of this stuff. He has several services that if you have the means, I mean, if you are somebody who has quite a bit of money, he has ways that you can get a second passport so you can do banking outside the United States. Maybe you could talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, I started the Dollar Vigilante just talking about all the problems. The tagline of the Dollar Vigilante is surviving and prospering during and after the dollar collapse. And as I started to talk more and more about it, I'd start to say things like, you really should get a second passport. It makes things easier. It's so difficult to do things worldwide now as an American. Get your assets, some of your assets outside of the U.S. They're starting to close the doors on your ability to do that. Things like that. And a lot of people said to me, well, how do I do that? And I've been living that sort of lifestyle for about 15 years, and I knew a lot about new great contacts, and so I started services to help people do that. So yeah, we have TDV passports. You can just go to tdvpassports.com. We help people from around the world even. It's not just the U.S. that has problems. Actually, a lot of the countries that the U.S. has attacked and occupied, like Syria and Libya, a lot of our clients, because their country's been destroyed by the U.S. war machine, and they just want to get a second passport so they can get out. And the other big part of our clientele are Americans who are realizing they should also get a second passport. So we help people with that. We have something called TDV Offshore. We just help people to get some of their money offshore into offshore corporations and bank accounts. We also have TDV Wealth Management, which we've actually devised a legally, totally It's been about to be signed off on by U.S. lawyers and U.S. accountants that this gets around FATCA for Americans. So this is a product that we're really excited about because we've had so many people, especially people with more than, say, $1 million that want to internationalize their assets and they're just not able to under FATCA in any way that that is comfortable at all without a ton of reporting and things like that. And this actually legally gets around it. So these are the kinds of things I'm doing. I kind of consider myself a freedom fighter. I'm just trying to help people to de-slave themselves or to get away from these governments who purport to own them, because I don't see the world that way. I see governments as being an unnecessary evil. And the more that things are going on, I think more and more people are agreeing with me.
Yeah, now, I want to also add, if you don't have $1 million in the bank or you aren't going to have it soon, it doesn't mean that you can't still be trying out these strategies to be free. You're just going to take you a little longer. It's going to take a little more legwork on your part. You're going to have to learn a second language. And once you pick the place you want to go to, because it's pretty hard to get citizenship if you don't speak their language, and you're going to have to learn some history about their country, and you're probably going to have to live there for a while. And you might have to work in some pretty crappy jobs because you're an immigrant. But it'll only last for a certain amount of time, and then you'll have that second passport, and you can go wherever you want, and you'll be a citizen of the world. So it's going to be a little bit of a hard work, but it's just because you don't have $1 million doesn't mean you can't do it. It just, if you've got some money, there's some shortcuts you can take, and Jeff can show you how to get those done.
Oh, absolutely. I think Americans really don't realize that it's not all that hard to do, even if you have very few assets. If you look back to Ellis Island back in the early 1900s in New York, where the U.S. was the place to go at that time, it was the freest place in the world, and that's why a lot of people went there. Your average person who showed up at Ellis Island in today's dollars had about $90 in their pocket, and a lot of them didn't even have shoes and things like that, and they just heard that there was a chance for opportunity in America, and they went. And everyone's seen the stories in the U.S. You meet someone from Vietnam who came over during the Vietnam War, so another time where the U.S. had destroyed a country, and they didn't speak a word of English. They had maybe a few $100. They maybe knew a few other Vietnamese people who lived around there who kind of helped them out for a month or two, and then pretty quickly after that, they owned their own Vietnamese restaurant or whatever and made a life for themselves. I think Americans have to get into that mindset, and I think I hear so much from Americans that, oh, I don't have enough money, or I've got too much student loan debt, or forget about it. The U.S. is going to be a disaster for the most part, maybe not every single area, but there's going to be a lot. It's not going to be very comfortable to be there for the next 5 or 10 years. There's not going to be much opportunity at all until this all settles itself out, and then maybe again it'll become a place of opportunity once all this debt and the government has been downsized by 95% plus, and hopefully 100%. That would be the best case scenario. And so look at other places, and don't, you know, people say, oh, how do I learn another language? It's really not all that. I'm here in Mexico. I speak pretty decent Spanish. It took me a couple of months, and Americans have so much opportunity and so many advantages, because English alone is definitely the most widely spoken language in the world. In terms of when you go to any country, there's always somebody who speaks English, always. Now, think of if you're a Chinese person and you want to go to Paraguay or a place, you know, just pick a country. How many people are going to know Chinese who work, you know, in many different places? Hardly anybody. So but you always see a Chinese restaurant almost anywhere in the world, and half the time they still don't speak the local language, but they get by. So these are the kind of mindsets that people should start to get more into. And one of the things we do at the Dollar Vigilante, by the way, is we have a large world network of like-minded expats who have gone and lived in other countries and who can help you. So we've got, I think, well over 50 different countries and more than 100 different cities around the world where people have already done these things, and there's a community of people in these areas that can help you to figure things out. So it's really not all that hard, as you're probably finding there in Playa del Carmen, Chuck. It's probably not all that difficult to be there.
This is a wonderful place to live. There's only one negative I see is if you, we were thinking we might want to grow a lot of our own food. The soil here is pretty poor, so that's probably not going to be an alternative for us, but or a possibility. But
aquaponics.
Just around the corner, there's some towns that have black soil, and they're still going to be the same kind of mindset. I love the Latin culture. I just think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's much more relaxed down here in Mexico. People just don't worry too much. It's almost exact opposite of the U.S., where everyone just seems stressed out and worried about everything and fearful of everything. It's so much better, in my opinion. That's why I originally came here, was not because I needed to or had to, but I just wanted to. I just found the lifestyle is so much better.
Yeah, you won't have to twist my arm on that one. I'm here to say yes to that. Well, we have some time left for anybody that wants to call in and ask some questions about 9/11 or bring up some other things that we haven't talked about tonight. There's much, much more that we could talk about. I don't want to. I think the important thing is that the official story is a lie, and it's caused everybody in the United States to be much, much, much poorer than they were before, and it's about ready to cause the collapse of the U.S. dollar, and you'd better have some contingency plans in place, because I think you said this the first time you were on a show, Jeff. It's better to be 2 years too early than a day too late.
Yeah, absolutely. That is definitely the case, and we're getting pretty close to not being very early at all at this point. And the other thing that you brought up, how 9/11 changed a lot of things, and it did. Not only did it impoverish people a lot more, you can just tell the economy in the U.S. is almost completely destroyed now, but it also took away so much of personal liberties, so things like the Patriot Act, and the U.S. having, I think, 8 times more than any other country on Earth per capita of people in prison camps, and they've actually turned those prisons into work camps now. They actually have people working there, making like 25 cents an hour. It's unbelievable. It's crazy, and a lot of people still don't see it for whatever reason.
Okay, we have a caller online. Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? Hey, Jeff. What's up?
How you doing?
I just want to say before I make a comment that, Jeff, I really enjoy your videos on YouTube. You're about the only one that gives straight talk. I listen to Peter Schiff sometimes, but, man, keep up the good work. You know, I really appreciate it, and a lot of us out here really appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Go ahead,
caller.
All right. I just want to make a couple comments about 9/11 real quick. I don't know if this was covered. I got in the program a little bit late, but he had the leaseholder of Building 7 and the two towers. Yeah, he did a documentary a few years back where he was saying that he got a call from the fire department and they said to pull it. And then he tries to recant that. I mean, it's like people, the truth has been out there, but they just are too stupid to care. But they don't even care. That's another thing. And and then also, I want to ask Jeff or you, if you ever heard of a CIA asset named Linda Lindauer. She gave some speeches. You can see her on YouTube where she was in jail. She was the only person ever thrown in jail under the Patriot Act. And she said that, you know, it was all, they knew it was going to happen. Hours were more shot off because they knew they couldn't stop it. They're like, well, we must have make it, you know, really effective. So I just want to know if you ever heard of her and what's your thoughts on what she says.
Actually, no, I haven't heard of her. It's amazing how many people are out there doing these things that we don't necessarily hear about, so that's great to hear that she has, and I'll definitely try to check her out. The other thing you're talking about was Larry Silverstein, who his story alone is so beyond unbelievable that this alone should have people asking questions. He complexes just a few months before 9/11. He then insured them specifically for terrorist attacks. He normally goes to work every day at the World Trade Center at 9 in the morning, which is about, you know, or 8 in the morning, whenever he usually has every morning breakfast before that, 7 or 8 in the morning at the very top of the World Trade Center. And that day he was late and he didn't go in. And then, like you said, he was actually interviewed in a documentary about World Trade Center 7. 9/11, and he said, to paraphrase him, he said that the loss of life was so big, it was so terrible that we just decided to pull it. And the word pull it is used by demolition companies. That's what the word they use when they're going to demolish a building. And when people saw that, they brought it up, and he said that he never said it. But of course, that day it would have been unbelievably insane because World Trade Center 7 was almost completely undamaged. It had a few small office fires in it. And then, according to Larry Silverstein on this one documentary, he just decided, well, we better just demolish it. And don't, on 9/11, with all this chaos going on, plant enough explosions perfectly to pull this building right in the middle of everything when there was actually no damage really done to the building. So the stories are unbelievable. And like you said, it's crazy that people don't care about this stuff. But it seems like they're just not willing to see reality. And that's too bad, because Ayn Rand said that you ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. And many of these people are going to have a very hard reality fall upon them in the next few years as this all collapses, and they are not expecting it at all or prepared for it.
Yeah, we didn't want to spend the whole show just talking about all the things that are wrong, but there's a couple other things that the caller brought up I wanted to finish off. There was a lot of financial trading that was going on prior to 9/11, where specific airlines were singled out for puts. Now, put is basically a short sale of a stock. You're betting that it's going to go down. And these insiders apparently had insider trading information. James Rickards has come out with a book called The Death of Money, and the kind of details this insider trading, and a lot of what was going on at Alex Brown, and it even spread to Max Kaiser says that CIA agents were doing this insider trading. James Rickards isn't quite prepared to go that far. Maybe he got a talking to on the phone call from an anonymous person who told him to shut up. But he said that it was probably amplified by the fact there's a lot of technical traders out there that just see something going on, they just jump on the bandwagon and ride it for a while and get off. And that probably made it look like it was a lot more of that going on than there was. But there definitely was insider trading going on. You don't just short two airlines out of all the airlines that are out there unless you know something. That was just really fishy. And then one other Bush relative, his cousin, and I forget the guy's name, and it isn't important, his cousin had scheduled a conference that morning at the South Tower, and they canceled it into the hotel across the street because the meeting room in the South Tower wasn't large enough. And he was one of George Bush's cousins. So, I mean, all the Bushes and the Bush friends seem to have been well taken care of.
Yes, it should also be pointed out that in World Trade Center 7 was a lot of the Securities and Exchange Commission who would have been able to look into a lot of these financial frauds that have been perpetrated for decades, really, but that was all disappeared at that time as well.
Yes, and also I believe they had a lot of evidence in there that was damaging about Bill Clinton and the Whitewater investigation in the 80s.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff was all just washed away. I think also the $2.3 trillion that was missing by the Department of Defense was also being investigated in that building. So, yes, and yeah, there's a lot of things that went on that we don't know about that are very interesting, and a lot of coincidences. And once you have about 1,000 coincidences that all tie in the same group of people all together, I think you stop calling them coincidences.
And they all seem to kind of lead to the same people all the time. You know, it's the same inner core or inner sanctum of people are all connected to every one of these coincidences somehow. From the people that wrote the insurance, the AIG, to the... But it just goes on and on and on and on. You can get buried in this so deep that you can't breathe anymore.
Yeah.
but the real important stuff is we're in a lot of trouble here in this country. And Jeff, you're always. I had the pleasure of meeting Jeff at Freedom Fest finally in person, and he's the real deal. He's just a nice person. He really wants to help people. He's out there to just give information away for free as much as he can. I mean, he also has to make a living. And so some of the information that he works real hard to get is kind of scarcer and has more value. That's for sale. And that's still at a rock-bottom price as far as I'm concerned. And like I say, how much would you pay for something that could make you into a millionaire, as it has many people subscribe to his newsletter? I mean, how much is that worth?
Yeah, I don't want to, we've made mistakes as well. We were too bullish on the junior gold mining stocks a few years ago, and that didn't work out well. But we've made a pretty good comeback with being into Bitcoin since $3 to $7. It's now $500. And then we really got into the legalization of marijuana, which is a worldwide movement going on right now, and got some of our readers into some investments in those areas in medical marijuana that have already gone up. One's already up 100% in the first week or two. So we do our best, and I think the real value that we're trying to provide is just trying to provide real information that you can't really get anywhere else. So it just doesn't seem like many other people talk about the things I'm talking about, and I call it the five killer bees for surviving the coming collapse, and that's gold bullion and related investments to that, Bitcoin, bullets. Well, I actually joked about at a conference about 3 years ago in the Bahamas, that it's I mostly say bullets just because I think you're going to need to protect yourself over the next few years as things collapse. There's going to be banks collapse, grocery stores will run out of food. It's going to be quite chaotic, but actually bullets as an investment has gone up dramatically because the Department of Homeland Security has been buying billions of hollow point bullets to protect the homeland from the people, I suppose. And then the other one that we've really been getting into is bud or marijuana, medical marijuana, which is being legalized around the world. It was just legalized in Colombia last week, I believe. I think today I just heard somewhere else, maybe it was Chile or something. Investing into that market big time. I see that as being a huge market. And the fifth B is just being, and that's where I talk about getting yourself organized, your own personal physical self. Get outside of the U.S. if you can. Get a second passport. And also be ready, because surviving what's going to be coming over the next few years is going to be incredibly dangerous and incredibly chaotic. And so if you're not physically fit, if you're not mentally fit, if you're not spiritually fit, if you don't have your own affairs in order, it's going to be much harder. So get prepared like you're getting ready for a war, because it's going to be like being in a war over the next few years. It's going to be incredibly dangerous. So get ready.
Yeah. I'm just going to add something to what you said. Doug Casey has this four flags theory, which I think is kind of unique, and it kind of sums up what you're trying to achieve. I think when you get out of the United States, you want to have a place to live that's secure, that you don't have to fear for your life all the time. Being having someone call the police on you and they come in and shoot you. That's happened in the United States over and over again. We could probably post stories on that once a week on Double Cross Radio, maybe more often. I don't know. If we looked harder, there's probably a lot more out there.
I think I was almost
that's
now.
The first thing. You want to get to a place that's a peaceful place. You want to have you want to live in a place like that. You want to make your money somewhere where there's a lot of opportunity, and that may not be where you're living. That might be Doug Casey thinks Africa is going to be a great place to invest in the future, but I'm not so sure I'd want to go there, but I might. If there was an opportunity there, I might take advantage of it. I don't know. You want to have your passport from another place, so
Chuck, we've lost your audio feed there.
Or Switzerland and the Grand Caymans. I don't know if those are still this was in a book that he published 2 years ago, so I don't know if those in the world that they were at one time. I think they probably still are. Switzerland maybe not quite so much anymore. They're kind of being beat down by the central banks.
Yeah, you cut out for a little bit, so I didn't hear all of it, but there's definitely economic opportunities way greater bigger than in the U.S. in numerous areas. The two areas I like the most are Asia and Latin America. If I was going to go to Asia right now, I would definitely go to Cambodia. I see tons of opportunity there right now. In Latin America, Chile is doing very well. I like Nicaragua for some reason. It's very free and very nice. Mexico is booming. The amount of economic increases here has been astounding. Every week, it seems like an auto manufacturer is moving here. Some major corporation is moving here. The Mexican stock market's up about 400 to 500% in the last 10 years, so that's quite a dramatic difference from the U.S. And people don't realize it; they don't get this information. So that's a big part of what I do, is try to get this information out to people.
Yeah. So it's not all just here. This isn't for a long time, this country was really something special, and now we just pretend like we're something special. We really aren't anymore, and the special parts of the world are they've caught up with us, they passed us by. I don't even know if we're in the top 20 economically anymore.
Well, GDP basis, yes, but in terms of real economic a good place to be, the U.S. is definitely not even close to it. You could across any country in Asia, but numerous countries in Latin America, numerous countries like the old satellite states, places like Estonia, Latvia, they're doing very well. These are services that you look at China, right? If you talked about China 20 years ago and said, oh, that's a good place to invest, people think you're crazy. And it's been booming because it's been much more capitalist and much more free in many different respects than the U.S. And the U.S. has actually been going the route towards more socialism, more fascism, communism, and you can see the results.
Yeah. And so anyway, we're winding up here. Is there any other products that you need to tell people about before we sign off? I think the stuff you're doing with legalized marijuana is got a great future. Hemp is one. This is not the psychoactive variety, but hemp has got so many different uses. There's no reason why it should be outlawed anywhere. They're even finding out that it has fantastic possibility as a replacement for bats. It would have a lot more storage capacity and infinite recharges, and it's just it's a fabulous building material, and it grows like a weed.
Yeah, hemp is really interesting because it used to be one of the main crops in the U.S. on the back of the $10 bill in the early 1900s was a hemp farmer. And what happened was it was another typical fascist, which means the businesses work with the government to make it all illegal. It was actually the petrochemical industry that did that. Hemp is a wonder plant. It actually rejuvenates the land when you grow it, as opposed to otherwise. It has a million applications, and then not to mention marijuana, which has so many medical and health benefits that are still being discovered. Cures seizures in children.
Cancer.
Yeah, apparently you can cure cancer. It's very interesting, and this is all starting. There's enough people in the world now realizing this that the governments can't stop it at this point, and so there's going to be massive investment opportunities there. And so those are some of the things that we talk about at the Dollar Vigilante, or especially at our other newsletter, which is just called TDV Golden Trader. That's where we really focus on medical marijuana investment opportunities.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, next week, Jeff, you probably met some of these people at Freedom Fest. We're going to have the president of Universidad Francisco Marroquin from Guatemala is going to be on to talk about a university where you have to take a year of Austrian economics regardless of what your degree is. And I think that's got to be one of the most exciting things I've ever heard in my life. These are the movers and shakers of the future for Guatemala are all going to know what the truth in economics is. They're going to be able to make better decisions on who their leader should be and all that sort of thing. So that's going to be next week's show. Make sure you turn in. It's going to be a really show. You're going to learn a lot about Guatemala. You're going to learn a lot about what Austrian economics is, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And Jeff, thank you so much for being on again. You were awesome. And keep spreading the word about 9/11 truth, because the truth will be known and it'll set us free.
Yeah, thank you very much. So that's great to have that you're having him on from Guatemala. That's awesome. And just to let you know, Chuck, especially since you're here in Mexico, on February 27th to March 1st, I'm having Anarcapoco. It's going to be an anarchist or a capitalist event right here on the beach in Acapulco. So hopefully you can make it down.
I'm hoping I can make it down too. I think my wife would like to come. We have to find a place for our dogs. Can we keep our dogs with you?
Nothing's a problem in Mexico. Don't worry.
Okay. We might see you then. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Double Cross Radio, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thank you for our caller. Thank you for the people in chat. If you're listening to some podcast, one more time. We'll see you next time.